You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, How to Turn Your Independent Film into a Money-Making Business by Alex Ferrari. For a free copy of the audiobook, head over to www.filmbizbook.com.
Welcome to the Director Series Podcast, a show dedicated to deconstructing the work of some of cinema's most celebrated and influential film directors. I'm your host, Cameron Bile.
Within Fincher's filmography, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button is just that, a curious case. It's his most awarded film, yet surprisingly, it's also one of his most controversial. The film is not well-liked amongst the film community at large, let alone his devoted fanbase. It is commonly accused of maudlin sentiments, which at the time of its release were at odds with a cynical American mentality wrought by terrorism and an unpopular war abroad. However, as the long march of time strips the film of the context of its release, its fundamental integrity increasingly reveals itself.
I promise you I'll never lose myself to self-pity again.
And I think, right there and then, she realized none of us is perfect forever.
The Curious Case of Benjamin Button is based off the F. Scott Fitzgerald book of the same name, published in 1922. A film adaptation had been in development since the 1970s, associated with a wide variety of big Hollywood names like Steven Spielberg, Robert Zemeckis, and Jack Nicholson. However, the idea never picked up much steam, due to the storyline of a man aging in reverse, which in the age before CGI would require five different actors playing Button at various stages of his life. Understandably, a leading role split up between five men wouldn't appeal to any one movie star, and the studio couldn't justify the required budget with a cast of unknowns. After a while, most executives started talking about it in the past tense, as one of those great screenplays that never got made. By the early 2000s, executives began to realize that CGI technology had caught up with the demand for a single actor to portray Button. They brought Forrest Gump scribe Eric Roth aboard to try his hand at a new draft. But the project really began generating momentum when Fincher, fresh off the success of Panic Room, became involved. Working with Spielberg's producers Kathleen Kennedy and Frank Marshall, he developed the film simultaneously with Zodiac, which ended up going before cameras first. Fincher's creative steerage was instrumental in securing the participation of Brad Pitt, and with the decision to forsake the novel's original Baltimore setting in favor of New Orleans and its generous post-Katrina tax incentives, the project was finally given the green light after decades of development.
I'm not as old as I look.
I thought so.
I heard Mama and Dizzy whisper and they said I was gonna die soon, but maybe not.
You're odd.
Brad Pitt's third collaboration with Fincher turns out to also be his most sophisticated. As the titular Benjamin Button, Pitt must convey a complex, singularly unique life through all its various stages and differing attitudes. The main through line of Pitt's performance is that of a curious innocent, who soaks in everything around him with wide-eyed glee because he was never supposed to live long enough to see it anyway.
Wait. I want to remember us just as we are now.
The majority of Pitt's performance is augmented by CGI, but his characterization is consistent and takes advantage of his off-kilter leading man sensibilities.
Daisy?
Oh my God!
Cate Blanchett's Daisy is an inspired counterpart, embodying a complex character who is both tender and cold, idealistic, and practical. Like Pitt, Blanchett must convey the full spectrum of womanhood within her performance, and does so quite convincingly, with a little help from CGI de-aging techniques and conventional makeup prosthetics.
Myself, I don't want to be with you. I tried to tell you that in New York. You don't listen.
I change your mind.
I think I may have given you the wrong impression.
Beg pardon?
Tilda Swinton plays Liz Abbott, Benjamin's mistress and lover during a short residency in a grand old Russian hotel. Swinton, like Blanchett, is capable of playing a wide variety of age ranges, and here she portrays an older, sophisticated, and worldly woman who introduces Benjamin to the adult world of secret love affairs and fine caviar.
Where in God's name have you been? Get in here!
You take my breath away, you know that? Oh, Lord, I was so worried about you.
As Benjamin's adopted mother, Queenie, Taraji P. Henson is a revelation. She projects a strong, resilient dignity that allows her to essentially run the show at the old folks' home Benjamin grew up in. Mahershala Ali, better known for his role in Fincher's House of Cards series, works with the director for the first time here as Tizzy, Queenie's lover and a distinguished, mild-mannered father figure to Benjamin. Jason Fleming plays Benjamin's real father, Thomas Button, as a man besieged by melancholy over how his life has turned out.
Your mother died, giving birth to you. I thought you were a monster. I promised your mother I'd make sure you were safe. I should never have abandoned you.
He's a rich man, but all the money in the world couldn't have prevented his current situation. So he keeps Benjamin at an emotional distance until it's time to pass his legacy and wealth on. And last, but not least, Elias Koteas, in his second consecutive performance for Fincher following Zodiac, plays Monsieur Gateau, a blind clockmaker. Consumed by grief after losing his son to the Great War, Gateau constructs a clock that hangs in the New Orleans train station and runs backwards, thus paralleling Benjamin Button's own life. The Curious Case of Benjamin Button furthers Fincher's foray into the digital realm. Working with the new visual collaborator and cinematographer Claudio Miranda, Fincher once again utilizes the Viper Filmstream camera to establish an all-digital workflow. Indeed, not a single frame ever saw celluloid before the striking of release prints. Acquisition, editing, and mastering was done entirely with bits and pixels, ones and zeros. Presented in Fincher's preferred 240:1 aspect ratio, the film is easily the director's warmest-looking picture to date. The frame is tinged with a slight layer of sepia, while the warm tones veer towards the yellow part of the color spectrum, and a cold blue-teal cast defines the current-day Katrina sequences. The incorporation of practical lights into the frame creates a high-contrast lighting scheme while making for moody, intimate interiors that evoke the old-world feel of New Orleans. Fincher's color palette deals mainly in earth and metal tones, which makes the presence of red all the more striking when it finally appears. The color red in general seldom makes an appearance in Fincher's work, a phenomenon that can be chalked up to Fincher's self-avowed aversion to the color as it appears on film due to its distracting nature. However, with Daisy's dress in particular, the costume designers were able to convince Fincher that the distraction served a legitimate story purpose. For a director so well known for his dynamic sense of camera movement, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button is a surprisingly sedate affair. While certain key moments are punctuated with dolly or technocrane movements, for the most part Fincher is content to let the frame stay static and allow the performances to take center stage. This approach is bolstered by returning production designer Donald Graham Burt's exceptional period reconstructions, themselves augmented with CGI and digital matte paintings. Fincher's regular editor, Angus Wall, stitches everything together in a deliberate, meaningful fashion that eschews flash in favor of truth and emotion. Kirk Baxter joins Wall and would go on to become part of Fincher's core editing team himself.
You can change or stay the same. There are no rules to this thing. We can make the best or the worst of it. I hope you make the best of it.
For the film's music, Fincher collaborates with Alexandra Desplat, who creates an elegiac, nostalgic score that's heavy on the lush romanticism, standing in stark contrast to the moody, foreboding scores that Howard Shore or David Shire created for Fincher's earlier films. Fincher supplements Desplat's whimsical suite of cues with several historical needle drops that fill out the period. Southern ragtime, R&B crooner hits like The Platters' Is My Prayer, and even The Beatles' Twist and Shout. Above all of these, the incorporation of Scott Joplin's Bethina Waltz stands out as the most powerful and cutting of cues.
Some people were born to sit by a river. Some get struck by lightning. Some have an ear for music. Some are artists. Some swim. Some no buttons. Some no Shakespeare. Some are mothers. And some people dance.
For a lot of people, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button doesn't feel like a Fincher film, mainly because of its optimistic and sentimental tone that stands at stark odds with the rest of his emotionally cold, nihilistic filmography.
A hotel in the middle of the night can be a magical place. A mouse running and stopping. A radiator hissing. A curtain blowing.
However, the film is right in line with the trajectory of Fincher's other thematic explorations. While the passage of time is a key theme specific to the film's story, it builds upon the foundation that Fincher established in Zodiac, a story that also took place over the course of several decades. The Old World New Orleans setting allows for lots of classical Victorian architecture in the form of ornate southern mansions and municipal buildings that, as the years tick by, give way to a modern mid-century feel. Despite being shot on digital, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button plays with the artificial constructs of the film medium in an attempt to emulate and evoke the format. Flashback sequences, like the blind clockmaker vignette and a man getting struck by lightning, are treated to look like old silent pictures from the Edison era. Jittery frames, contrast fluctuations, and heavy scratches. These filters, applied in post-production, serve to differentiate the flashbacks from the sumptuously shot main story, but they also clue into a curious phenomenon that has risen out of the industry's quick shift into digital filmmaking, the treating of digital footage to look like celluloid film. Along with Robert Rodriguez's Planet Terror in 2006, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button is one of the earliest mainstream instances of applying filmic artifacts onto a digitally pure image. The film's release in 2008 was met with modest commercial success and polarized reviews, with some deriding it as a Forrest Gump knockoff, while an equally vocal contingent hailed it as a technical triumph and a masterpiece of storytelling. Fincher had his first real brush with the Oscars after the film's release, with his direction receiving a nomination in addition to a nomination for Best Picture. It would collect a slew of actual wins for its groundbreaking visual effects work and seamlessly mapping a CG face onto a live-action body performance. It is an admittedly easy film to dismiss for cynical reasons, but The Curious Case of Benjamin Button holds many treasures for those who choose to embrace it. Like its unique protagonist, the film will persist through the ages, precisely because of its poignant insights into the meaning of our fragile, fleeting existence on this earth. It's a commonly held notion that age softens even the hardest of personalities. The production of The Curious Case of Benjamin Button saw Fincher enter middle age and come to grips with his own mortality after the death of his father. As such, the film is an unexpectedly sentimental and heartfelt entry in the director's canon. Several years removed from its release, it stands as a portrait of an artist looking back on his life, and softening his edge without sacrificing who he is. The mid-aughts found Fincher taking his first bold steps into the digital realm, and it would be in these new uncharted waters that Fincher would shape his evolving aesthetic into its most potent form.
Thank you for listening to the Director Series. For a deeper dive into your favorite filmmakers, go to www.directorseries.net.
The Director Series is made possible in large part by our generous supporters on Patreon. Please visit us at patreon.com/directorseries to see how your contribution enables the continued production of video essays and text articles on your favorite contemporary and classic film directors. Thank you.